From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made September 10th and September 14th, the first days of school for students in Webster and Gates-Chili, respectively. It has been a whirlwind of a summer of school administrators and teachers trying to figure out what to do and how to do it. It's going to be a very different type of school year, to state the obvious. Classrooms will look different, so will instruction for many students. And throughout the last month, we've been talking with superintendents, teachers, parents, and students who say, obviously, there's not an ideal solution for opening schools during a pandemic. There are going to be questions, concerns, and hope for what will likely be an ever-evolving situation. This hour, we continue those conversations with local superintendents. Our goal is to talk with as many of them as possible about their reopening plans before the start of the school year. If you're a parent or a teacher, our guest today can help answer your questions. If you don't have any school-aged children in your life, these discussions regarding schools are still relevant because these are community-wide issues. They affect all of us. I'd like to welcome our guests now. Christopher Daly is superintendent of the Gates-Chili Central School District. Superintendent Daly, welcome to the program.
No, thank you.
And Carmen Gamina is superintendent of the Webster Central School District. Superintendent Gamina, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Evan.
I'm going to ask both of you just to begin by laying out what the reopening plans look like in your districts, and then we'll talk about how some of the specifics will work. Superintendent Daly, can you get us started?
Sure. We are going with a hybrid model where students will be coming either Monday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Friday. Wednesday will be a remote at-home learning day. We had, out of our roughly 4,000 students, we had 1,000 choose to do fully remote as well. So that's had a significant impact on us as we are staffing and scheduling for the fall. Classes will average between 10 and 15 students per class when they're in session or in person for the hybrid model. Based on classroom size. It's been a very interesting dynamic in trying to schedule transportation, but luckily for us, our community responded, and many are choosing to drive their students or provide alternative transportation. So that's helped with the restrictions on how many students can be on a bus and getting them back and forth to school safely. So that has been a plus. But now, of course, you have to figure out traffic patterns for the additional drivers coming to all our campuses. So it should be interesting, to say the least.
Superintendent Daly, I assume that means you've literally been surveying parents saying, are you able and willing to drive or to transport your children on your own?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever had a puzzle this complex to solve, Superintendent Daly?
This is a new one. It's complex and it's consistently changing, I think, as any superintendent, staff member, family member will tell you. Just when you think you've got a good hold of it, there's a new twist to it coming out of the Albany area. So, but we're adjusting and working together. We've had a very good working relationship with our unions in order to put together a plan that makes this year going to be great for all our students in whatever shape or form it goes in. So far it's been very, very positive. The parental and community support has been outstanding.
What percentage of families, of parents, are deciding that their students are going to be full remote to start the year?
For us, it's about 25-26%.
That's higher than a number of other districts we have talked to, though, of course, that's also the most recent number. So, I suspect, maybe 20-25%. Do you suspect that'll be end up being an average to start the year for many districts locally?
I can't speak for others, but for us, we were anticipating less. But it was, we were thinking maybe 15%, but this is what families feel comfortable with the information provided. So we're supporting them. It's led to us having to basically, we do our staffing for a year starting in February. It led to us redrafting, I guess, for each of our buildings, how we do things in order to accommodate the higher numbers of people that need remote only at this point.
Yeah, and given that this strange circumstance leads to a need for physical distancing, does a higher number than you expected of students going full remote, does that help you?
Depending on the grade level, yes. Again, it's a difference between having 12 and maybe 11 kids in a class on the alternate days. It hasn't significantly made it so that we could offer full-time, four-day-a-week at any level at this point, though.
Okay, fair enough. And when it comes to teachers coming back, have you had some staff, teachers, et cetera, saying not comfortable with it, we're not going to be back?
We're working through that process, but sure, just like every other district, we have some that have some medical requirements that would not allow them to be back but are able to work remotely. So we're adjusting to that as well.
Does that mean for teachers that they have the option to not be in the building but still be working?
Yes, there are for some based on their medical needs, yes.
Okay. But it doesn't sound to me, Superintendent Daley, that the number of teachers and staff who cannot or will not come back to the buildings, it doesn't sound like that number is high enough that it's going to prevent you from doing what you need to do to have school open. Is that correct?
No, it's not, at this point, no.
Okay. Superintendent Gamina, can you lay out the plan for Webster?
Well, I should just say ditto, because Mr. Daley, Superintendent Daley's plan is very, very similar to, and his challenges are very similar to those in Webster. We, too, are in a hybrid model, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday, Friday, for middle school and high school. Where we differ a little bit with many other districts, at our K-5 elementary, our hybrid model is actually on an AM-PM split. So our elementary students come to school every day, whether it's AM session or a PM session, for approximately 2 to 2.25 hours. We too have 1,000 students that have opted for fully remote. That represents about 13% of our students out of a total of 8,400. And our class sizes are very similar to what Superintendent Daley just mentioned. We're looking at 10 to 13 at the elementary level for in-person learning, and probably 11 to 14 at the middle and high school level. The same challenges in terms of the transportation piece. Similar to Gates Chilai, it's fantastic that our parents, who we've been surveying for the last 6 or 7 weeks, have also sort of stepped up and said, no, we can provide transportation. So it has alleviated that stressor on our district.
When I'm looking at Webster's, I think these are the options. 100% remote learning, obviously an option, as all districts are presenting to parents. Hybrid to start the year, and then 100% in-person learning. Am I reading something wrong there, Superintendent Gamina? I mean, is that going to be an option? Is that an option now?
No, that's not an option. We have some of our special classes, our special education classes, 1214, 811, our students that are perhaps most fragile, and have the most intense needs, they will be in school each day. Excuse me, they'll be in school each day. But you know, but those are the, and that might account for maybe 60 to 80 of our kids out of 8,400. But for typically, it's very similar to what Superintendent Daley shared about the Gates Chilai district.
Sure. Okay. What about teachers or staff who've told you that they're not able or not comfortable coming back?
Yeah, and so we've had like other districts, we've had a few, and some of those teachers that have medical needs requested just to teach remotely. So that was wonderful for us because it was easier to staff our remote team that way. And then there are others that are just like, no, I can't do. It's really hard to come in or to teach at all this year. And that happens every single year, whether you're in a pandemic or not. I mean, there's teachers that have, and staff members that have some pretty complex medical things that have popped up. So, but we are able to basically staff a remote learning team and then all of our in-person teams as well.
Superintendent Gamina, do you, I want to talk a little bit about what we can reasonably expect throughout a calendar school year during a pandemic, because it seems unlikely that there would be no infections in a community as large as Webster or perhaps Gates Chilai or really most school communities. And I'm not talking about hospitalizations. I'm just talking about infections. Mm-hmm. Governor Cuomo said today, about an hour ago, he said that a New York State new policy for colleges and universities is any college or university with 100 infections or more on campus, or the equivalent of 5% of the student body or more on campus infected, has to go full remote for at least 2 weeks, a shutdown and a full remote for 2 weeks. Now, that's higher ed. That's not K through 12. Mm-hmm. We don't know that the state would do anything like that with K through 12. Would that be reasonable to you? Do you have an idea in your mind about what is sustainable when it comes to possible infections and when you'd have to say, hey, we're going full remote?
That's a great question. So right now, our region is at a 0.5% positivity. And when I translate that number to our student body, so that's half of 1%. So that's four of our students in Webster, 8,400, if I'm doing my math correctly. Mm-hmm. 5% infection rate. So if we were to have the same parameters as higher ed right now, 5% is 420 kids. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty high number in my mind. So to get back to your original, you know, your question of, okay, how many shuts us down for a couple of weeks? I don't have an answer. Luckily, Superintendent Daly and I and all the other superintendents are in weekly contact with Dr. Mendoza, and it's been wonderful to have his guidance. And that's the one piece for us that we would be able to continue to work so well with the Department of Health because obviously with one positive case, it's just not that one person and that person's and that student's family. It's actually, okay, who is that person potted with at the elementary level? Who did that person come into close contact with at the middle or high school level? And then how many people are going to be quarantined and how many staff members will be quarantined as well? As I mentioned to our community and to our staff in Webster, the piece that I think that's keeping most superintendents up at night, among many, many things, but for me, it's what happens when our absentee rate for staff goes up to a point where we have 30% of our staff out. And, you know, then what do we do? And it may not be because they're all COVID positive. It just might be because they are either quarantined or that they're not feeling well. So they have a cough. It's probably not COVID, but they have a cough. Most of us, and I think Superintendent Daly would agree, most of us always get sick at the end of September. We get our first fall cold because we've been with the kids for 3 or 4 weeks, and we typically work through it. Well, we can't work through that anymore. We have, you know, we're going to, if you know, once you have some symptoms, you're going to be staying home. And that's going to be the part that I think will cause us to take a break. It'll be that type of attendance issue. But the other piece of this, Evan, and I'll stop. The other piece is the fact that we're going to be distanced and masked can really help with those fall colds and some of the other things that we typically get, even with the flu. So hopefully we will see a dramatic decrease in the colds and the other illnesses that we get because we're, you know, washing our hands, masking and distancing.
Absolutely. And I'll, I want to talk about that masking policy from both of these districts in just a moment, and I'll follow up with Superintendent Daly. But just one more point there, because, you know, Carm, when you talk about your teachers who may wake up with a scratchy throat and go, you know, I don't think it's COVID. But what do you do with it? It's technically on the symptom list. That was me last Friday. I missed my second day of work on this show in 7 years last Friday because I woke up with a sore throat. Now, I got up, I drank some hot coffee. I felt like, you know, decent. I could, you know, talk and do, you know, stuff. But, you start talking to colleagues and they say, well, how would you feel, Evan, if you had colleagues show up with a sore throat? And I said, probably not great. I'm looking at you, Rob Braden. Don't you come in here with a sore throat. And so I got COVID tested and it was negative. And I stayed home from work. I worked from home, but I didn't host the show. That was hard for me because I don't like missing work. I rarely miss work. I'm probably the type in the past who's worked through too many colds and things like that pre-pandemic. At the same time, you start asking yourself, you know, like, boy, am I going to be responsible if somebody else gets sick? And, you know, it's nerve-wracking. It's really tough. And I'm in a kind of the luxury, Superintendent Gamina, of being able to miss work for a day, whereas some teachers might feel like, well, we don't have enough staff. I've got to be there. How do you communicate to your staff that we don't want to be hypochondriacs, but we want to be serious, and it's okay to say I've got a symptom and I'm staying home? How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, you do it as often as you can. So, you know, we've been trying to have this discussion for months now. And I've told this story to colleagues and teachers and parents. My wedding anniversary is on October 1st, 32 years coming up. And every October 1st, and I've been an educator for that long, every October 1st, I've never felt great on a anniversary.
I knew you were
I'm always sick because, it's the incubation period for colds after being around our Petri dishes of students. And most educators, you just work your way through it because preparing sub plans is a pain and so on and so forth. But you're right, Evan. You took your second day of work off last Friday, and there will be many teachers that never take a sick day. But when they wake up and they're not feeling well and they have that cough especially, I think the message has been consistent that you got to stay home. You can't work through stuff like that anymore. You have to stay home. And that's going to be a huge change for many of our teachers. And again, that's why it keeps superintendents up at night. It's because the vast majority of our teachers would work through it, and now they're going to be staying home. And now what do we do?
Do you have subs ready to go? I mean, you have more subs ready to go? Is it tough to find subs ready to go?
I think Superintendent Daly is laughing for the same reason I'm laughing. Finding subs has been really hard over the last 4 or 5 years because our economy has been so good, right? And so everyone is basically fully employed. So it could be easier this year because of the way our economy is. However, the flip side of that is some subs are just really reluctant to come in. But I do think that the vast majority of people will still want to come in because they still love being with students and they're ready and raring to go. So we're not foreseeing a huge problem with substitutes at this point, but let Chris and I call in again in about 6 weeks, and then we'll tell you what reality is like.
Yeah, okay. Well, Superintendent Daly, how do you see this challenge with your staff and possible subs and making sure you've got the staff there?
Yeah, that is, as Carm said, is the thing that keeps you up at night because we're putting these great plans together to make school great for our kids. And we have staff that have always been able to work through a cold or different things that now are going to have to stay out, and making sure that we're actively recruiting on our subs to come in. We made a concerted effort this spring and raised our sub rate to put us at or near the top in Monroe County for people that were coming in on a daily effort. So we've been doing orientations throughout August to get more people in, because we know now with what we have to do that we're going to need them more than ever when the, as Carm so aptly put it, you get that late September, early October cold. That's something we worry about, but we're doing everything we can to get as many subs as possible so that we can make sure that when our staff do have to take those days that we can cover it. But, you know, hopefully it's a better with people wearing masks and washing their hands and social distancing. That'll help alleviate some of this. It won't root it out, but hopefully that'll help with this. And I agree with Carmen. Let's see in 6 weeks. Hopefully we've gotten past the cold and have been able to successfully keep everything open.
Talking to Christopher Daly, the superintendent of Gates Chi-Lai Central School District, and Carmen Gamina, superintendent at Webster, answering our questions and community questions. We'll get to those in our second half hour. If you've got questions for the superintendents on how to open school safely and responsibly, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Superintendent Daly, what is the masking policy at Gates Chi-Lai?
Students and staff are required to mask all day long. There will be mask breaks built in at grade levels, age appropriate, and so our expectation is they are wearing them all day. We're also providing face shields for our staff in addition to that, with additional PPE. So when they get on the bus in the morning, they're having it. They have to have the mask to get on, and they keep it on all day, except for breaks such as eating and scheduled breaks when allowed.
Do you have confidence that the students, I mean, I know you're going to build in breaks, you said, as age appropriate, but that the students are handling this pretty well and can handle what you're going to ask them to do with masking?
You know, we've always found that whether it's masking, other things, the students will rise or sink to your expectations. And we have phenomenal teachers and family support from the community to make it happen. So we believe there will be an adjustment period. But I think we'll be able to help students and staff understand how important it is and them playing a part in trying to end having to wear them long term.
And Superintendent Daly, just before I turn to your colleague on the subject of masking, a local teacher emails us the following, quote, "I'm more concerned about teachers and admin not wearing a mask properly than the students. Just yesterday, I was at my school for a meeting. I saw a few teachers wearing their masks on their chins. I know we cannot generalize this to the whole teacher community all throughout the Rochester area, but I'm afraid that in spite of all the talk about masking going on, I was shocked to see teachers not showing respect to others. We should be the ones setting a good example for the students. And last week, the superintendent of one of the districts took a mask off as soon as the live meeting ended. There were 6 to 7 people still in the room in close proximity. If we as teachers and admin don't wear a mask properly, I'm not sure how we can enforce the students wearing them properly either. This feels to me like a battle that we, the concerned people and teachers, might not be able to win because of the lack of care and empathy that teachers and staff show and end up causing teachers, students, and family members to die at the end." I mean, that's a strong statement from a local teacher, but really concerned about whether you're going to have really everybody on board with this at the staff level, not even just the student level. How do you feel about Superintendent Daly?
Well, we're going to have to reinforce expectations on a regular basis, just like with any other rule, and consistently communicate it. Some people will make mistakes, and we'll help them learn from it, because it is very important to us that we do this and everybody do their part. And again, we don't know whether they were socially distanced when that mask was taken off. We don't know any of that based on the statement. But we also need to make sure that we reinforce our expectations. It's a new normal that we have to get used to. And I believe our staff and administration and our students will do everything they can to keep each other safe.
Okay. Superintendent Gamino, what's the masking policy at Webster?
It is the same as Gates Chalet, and I would imagine it's the same across all 19 of our districts. As soon as the kids get on a bus, they're masked. They're masked throughout the day, obviously there can be mask breaks depending on the grade level and on the teacher and what the activity is and if there's social distancing and such. Piggyback on what Chris just said regarding staff expectations, I do think that just trying to have that clear, consistent message for all of our adults that are helping our kids, whether they're faculty or staff or whatever their role is, I think that's really important. And I do think that the vast majority of our adults, whether it's Gates Chalet or in Webster, understand the science behind this. And I think that's what's been driving, our decisions in Webster and in Gates and Gates Chalet. You know, the science is clear. You know, it the masking and the distance definitely works. And I do think that our teachers certainly understand that, and our administrators do as well.
When it comes to aerosols, I mean, we saw in the last week even better data and research indicating what we've known and exactly why we mask, which is that really the aerosolization of the virus is the main form of its spread, and does mean that we're not worried about surfaces, door handles, things
right.
like that. We are. I mean, it does mean it's impossible for it to spread that way, but it's certainly not as potent in spreading that way as we perhaps feared in March or April.
Correct.
But it's more potent in spreading in indoor setting when people are there for extended amounts of time here. So, Superintendent Gamina, I mean, a lot of parents who hear that, they go, well, just update your air conditioning or update the air system, which I imagine is expensive. I have no idea what that even entails. Was that an option at all?
No, not really. And it's because, in Webster, Our HVAC is definitely it's up to code and up to standard. And across every school building, you know, the school building's HVAC is really built and designed for airflow, and really not designed for comfort, which sounds like a really strange thing to say. But you know, in a mall, in a commercial building, you know, you want a regular temperature and so on and so forth. And but for school buildings, you really want to refresh the air inside your building as often as you can per hour. And most school buildings, and I'll speak only to Webster, but you know, basically you want to refresh the inside air with outside air. And we do that like 4 to 12 times per hour. So about every 8 minutes on average, you know, any particular closed space or classroom, that air has been recirculated and replaced basically with outside air. That's really, really important for the reasons that you just brought up. So people may complain it's way too cold, it's way too hot, but at least, again, we have that circulation of the air throughout our buildings.
Okay. Superintendent Daley, same question. Why not just drop whatever it takes and update your systems?
I would like to use Carm's answer from earlier, ditto, because we have the same. It recirculates. In order to try and get it going, we're actually starting a couple hours earlier in the morning, getting that fresh air recirculated so that we can do that. And again, we're also facing a 20% state aid reduction coming as we're being mandated to try and change everything as well. So we've updated all our filters and all the things over the summer to get to meet and exceed what the requirements are. And again, with the airflow and the air circulation that we do have, we're very comfortable where we are.
Well, I want to make sure, you know, I do understand what the budget cuts may mean. So in Gates-Chili, my understanding is that a letter has gone out to families trying to get their kids into universal pre-K, letting these families know that a reduction in state funding could force the district to provide 6 rather than 8 full-day pre-kindergarten sections. And a spokesperson for Gates-Chili says the school district was recently informed it'll lose at least $180,000 in state aid to fund pre-K. She said, this is the last thing we'd ever want to do to our families and our students, end quote. But it looks like that's the reality right now. What do you do with that? What is a solution for this, Mr. Superintendent?
Well, we're still able to offer 6. We communicate with our families as soon as possible so they can make other arrangements. It breaks our heart to have to do it, but we're glad that we can still offer 6 sections. But again, you know, there's only so much money to go around. So we were able to make sure that we had 6 sections to influence our youngest learners and families. And it's nothing any superintendent ever anticipates or wants to do, but it was the responsible thing to do to have it happen as quickly as possible so that families can make adjustments prior to the year.
Is there a possible solution for this?
It'd be great if the federal government came through and funded so that we would not be losing in Gates, for example. A 20% cut across the board would be $8.5 million in state aid. To have the federal government come through for the state so that they don't have to in turn get it from us would allow us to preserve a lot of things that are great for our students.
Superintendent Gamina, what is the hardest budgeting situation for you there in Webster?
Well, right now, at a 20% across the board cut for us would mean about a $10 to $12 million reduction, and you know, I think we're not in the same position that Superintendent Daley is with pre-K just yet, you know, and we're looking at, all right, we don't want to do mid-year cuts. I mean, that's the one thing that no district ever really wants to do. So you prepare your budget prior, saying, all right, you know what, if the apocalypse comes, here's what we can do to sort of get us through this this year. And you know, right now it's some pretty crazy stuff, Evan. It's you know, I'm sure Chris and I, when we were in administrator school, superintendent school, we never thought we would be leading our communities through a pandemic, a 20% budget cut, total remote learning, and trying to, you know, staff, you know, with trying to put a whole staff together as well, with, you know, all these things that are sort of on our plate. But with that said, it's, you know, these are the lemons that we're given, right? So you try to make the best lemonade you can have, and you just keep moving forward. And luckily, both Gates Chila and Webster have incredibly supportive communities. And I know our parents have been so patient with us, and I'm sure Chris can say the same thing. So we are incredibly grateful for that.
What is the possible solution on the budgeting side?
Yeah. So I think it's something that certainly Chris just alluded to, and I know Governor Cuomo has said time and time again over the last 3 or 4 months, and that is, you know, is there a way for some federal stimulus monies to help fill some of those holes that have decimated the New York economy, which then again flows downhill to schools and social services. So that would be, you know, that's the most obvious piece. And hopefully that will happen. But again, you can't count on it. You hope for it, but you know, you also just have to say, all right, 20% is coming. So we better be ready for it.
We're talking to two superintendents from local districts. That's Carmen Gamina, superintendent of Webster, Christopher Daly, superintendent of Gates Chila. We'll take our only break of the hour and come back to your emails at connections@wxxi.org for them next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about a massive shift in summer jobs. Do you remember your first summer job? 20 years ago, half of American teenagers had summer jobs. This summer, it's less than a quarter. It's not just because of the pandemic. There was a massive shift underway already. What does that mean for the future of work? What does it mean for teenagers who are starting their careers later? We're going to talk the change in summer jobs next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And let me get some of your listener emails here. Dan in Webster is asking, what protections from lawsuits do districts have if, unfortunately, students, teachers, and or parents and guardians become infected with COVID-19? That's a Webster question. So, Superintendent Gamina, I'll start with you. Is that a concern of yours?
Well, let's see. I'm sure that every superintendent would give you the same type of answer, which is, we can be sued for anything by anyone any day, and we typically are. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, most of us have at least one or two a month that pop up, and it's sort of the cost of doing business. But you know, you work with your legal expertise, you work with your legal counsel. You budget for that as well, and you know, I think, you know, my scientific answer would be, I think all of us are doing the absolute best that we can. We have a 0.4% positivity rate. We had approval from the governor. We have distancing and masking, and you know, it's sort of hard to say, well, you know, we understand that people sometimes get sick, you know, I'm not really sure how else we could keep that from happening unless we were totally remote. That is obviously the safest way to go, is go totally remote. And that's the only safest way in terms of infection. In terms of mental wellness for our students and for our staff, I'm not really sure if that's the safest way to go.
Okay. Did you consider full remote?
No, not. I mean, as soon as, again, when you look at our numbers and then with our governor as well saying that we could go, and with our staff and faculty saying, you know what, we want to try the hybrid, and we're willing to do this, and then we knew we had the staff for it, then it was like, okay, no, it's a no-brainer. Let's try to make this hybrid model work.
All right, Superintendent Daly, are you concerned about lawsuits?
As Carm shared, you know, it's the process and the opportunity cost of doing business. So could it happen? Sure. And anyone can sue anyone on any given day. And again, similar to Carm, when we surveyed both our staff and our families, overwhelmingly they wanted in-person whether it was hybrid or fully involved 5 day a week, overwhelmingly compared to going to remote. So we're serving our community as well as what our staff asked for as well.
Yeah, I mean, I always have to be careful here. I am not a lawyer, and I cannot offer legal advice. I will say that back in May, when there were phased reopenings going on for businesses, there were a lot of questions that businesses had, that essentially saying, hey, if we reopen our business and someone gets sick and they try to say we got sick here, are we going to get sued out of existence? The basic answer is probably not. As long as you have a plan, that plan's been submitted to the state on the business side, you're following it, you're being thoughtful, you know, you're not being reckless. And the answer is probably not. It's hard to pin down where an infection happened anyway, but if it happened at a place that is trying reasonably within the guidelines to conduct business or conduct school, you probably can't get sued. That's what I was told back in May. Again, that's not legal advice, but I think that that's probably a good bet here. So, now some lawyer will email me and say, this is where you're wrong, Evan, because I'm always wrong. There's always a lawyer who's ready to tell me I'm wrong. Greg writes to say, kids are already desocialized enough as it is. Online learning is only going to add to it. That's from Greg. Superintendent Gamina, is that what you were talking about with why you didn't really consider full remote?
Yeah, yes. And I think the vast majority of families want their children back in school. The vast majority of students want to be back in school. They want to be with their friends. We are social beasts. We have to have that connection piece. Now, with that said, there are a few students that just they love the remote learning. And it's not very many, but they thrive in it. And that's great. But for the vast majority of our kids, they want to come back. They want to interact with their friends. They want to interact with their teachers, and they want to have some sense of normalcy, even if that sense of normalcy is only 2 days a week. But at least it's something, and it's these small steps forward.
Superintendent Daly, how do you view the concern of Greg, who says full remote or even extended remote is going to do some socialization damage?
Oh, I totally agree. We put out a survey this August to families to help us know what they and their students are going to need coming back, as well as our staff, to these unique times we're living through. And again, education is all about relationships and having our students connect with their teachers in this environment. And we've learned, similar to what Carm shared, in that We had kids that thrived in remote, but we had a lot more that really, really need to get back, get into a classroom, and make that connection with their teacher in person. That's what they're used to. That's what they value. That's what they need. And the families have overwhelmingly shared that with us. So, you know, we're preparing for, it won't be a typical opening where you walk in first day, you get your syllabus, and you kick off. It's going to be building those relationships and getting used to being back in proximity to everybody and trying to get back to some semblance of what it was, because it's still going to be different than what they left back in March. So,
sure. So on the subject of enforcement, Julian emails to say, Evan, our next-door neighbors do not wear masks. Their children do not wear masks. They very loudly and pointedly make fun of people who wear masks, and they've told us their kids are going back to school and will not wear masks in school. This already has us concerned for a school atmosphere that's going to be tense to begin with. How are they going to enforce this? That's from Julian. Superintendent Daly, if you've got students who show up under these circumstances, What's the protocol? What happens when there's no masking?
We updated our code of conduct and character with the board earlier this month, and that if students refuse to, they will be removed from the class, and if they continue to be, they would be put on remote learning. It's a district expectation that all students during this time have to have it. If parents choose not to have their student and then the student chooses not to, they will not be allowed to attend in the hybrid. It's a matter of health and safety that we just have to enforce.
Okay, and before I get Superintendent Gamina on that, just to kind of follow up here, will you provide a mask for that student? Will you?
Yes. Yep, they'll be offered a mask. They'll have every opportunity to stay and do it the right way. and we believe most will do it. Some kids may forget it, et cetera.
Sure.
We have them on the bus as you're coming on. We have them in every classroom, office, et cetera, for people. So there will be every opportunity for that child to make the right choice, and we hope they do. But if a family or individual chooses not to and defies the expectation, then they'll have to choose remote learning exclusively because they can't be in school and putting others in jeopardy.
Yeah, I take the point that kids will forget. I mean, we as adults forget sometimes. I mean,
I said
recently, I got out to go pick up coffee the other day, and I'm halfway down the block, and I went, oh my gosh, I feel naked.
Yep.
Going back to the car. That's very different, though, than someone showing up and obstreperously saying, I'm not wearing a mask, it's not going to happen. Have you had parents tell you that you can't require this, that their kids won't do it and that they don't believe it?
We did, and they've chosen to go remote.
Wow, okay. So over the issue of masking, you've had some parents say, that's it, okay. Superintendent Gamina, have you had parents say, our kids are not going to wear masks and you can't make us do it?
Yeah, we've had a few, and, I mean, technically they are right in the sense of, you know, we can't force their children to wear a mask, but their children won't be entering our buildings. They'll be home. And if as a family you choose not to wear a mask for whatever reasons that you have, then okay. So that's why we have 100% remote. That's awesome. That's an awesome choice for you. But as Chris just said, entering our buildings, we're all going to be masked because it's out of respect for each other, and it's around community health. And again, it's about science, and you know we're going to follow the science. And for those families that just aren't into that, that's okay. So they're going to stay home. I do think that the vast majority of kids understand that. They also understand that, you know, that they're doing this. Yeah, if they get it, maybe they don't get that sick. But I also think, you know what? I don't want to get my 45-year-old teacher sick. I don't want to get my 55-year-old superintendent sick because he's old. And if he gets sick, it might be a lot different than if I'm 13 years old, he actually may get much sicker than I would. So, and I do think that kids they will respect that piece, and they'll say, you know what, this is the right thing to do. So I'm not expecting a huge blowback around this because, as Chris said, most of our families that are totally anti-masking, they've chosen either to homeschool or to join our remote team.
Sure. No, I think Julian's email is indicative of the kind of response we've heard for the last couple of weeks from people in this community who have seen stories, for example, the viral photos out of Georgia, which, you know, a packed hallway, very few people wearing masks, and a superintendent down there saying, you know, we can't make people do it. I know that that's not indicative of what's happening in Monroe County and in the Finger Lakes and in Western New York, but I do think that that maybe had a kind of psychic effect on parents who were on the fence.
Yeah.
And so when Julian says, look, my next door neighbor, they don't wear masks. They make fun of people who wear masks. They said their kids are going to go to school and not wear masks. I think what that betrays is a doubt that the rules will be enforced enough. And it sounds to me like, Superintendent Gamina, you're not going to hesitate to enforce that rule.
That is absolutely correct. And I would think that every other superintendent in Monroe County would tell you the same thing.
What have you learned, Superintendent Gamina, from seeing other districts and other states perhaps that opened earlier? I mean, is there anything that you've been able to glean so far?
Yeah, you know, I am so grateful for a variety of reasons. One, since the pandemic started, or since we went out in mid-March, the 19 superintendents in our area have been meeting at least weekly, sometimes two or three times a week at the very beginning, to really brainstorm and to support each other and to have as common an approach as possible. I've been very grateful for that. I'm also really grateful that we have County Executive Bello and Dr. Mendoza, who have been sort of keeping us to the science. They've been saying, listen, here's what we're going to do. Here's the reason why. Here's the science behind it. And it's obviously worked. I mean, we went from a state that had the highest positivity rate to the state that I think has one of the lowest, if not the lowest. So, as I look at the other states that attempted to open early, And also those states that perhaps didn't enforce the same distancing and masking rules that we will be. I know that I would be really uncomfortable. If we were looking at a 10% positivity rate and we were being told that we would have to open schools, I think, especially in our area, I'm not sure how well that would go over. So I'm just really grateful that we have the support that we do among the superintendents and that we're also following science.
Before the hour's up, I do want to ask both of you, Superintendent Daley, can you envision more outdoor learning, especially in the fall before the weather really turns here? I mean, every district, every school building is a little bit different. We do know that in more urban settings, there's not a whole lot of room sometimes to do that. In districts that have more space, in other states that have tried to open up a little bit early, they've been doing more outdoor classes. And a lot of people are asking, why not? What do we expect there, Superintendent Daley?
Absolutely. As long as the weather is good enough, we're encouraging our staff to get creative and use the surroundings. We have great grounds throughout our district and access to things that will allow them to do some things differently than we've done before. So we're highly encouraging them to use that aspect, especially as we get started to build the community within their classroom.
Superintendent Gamina, outdoor learning, what do you think?
Absolutely. And I know that some of our music teachers have, they're looking to bring some of their kids outside so they can be, properly distanced and, perhaps even hum a tune or sing a song where they're, 12 to 15 feet apart. And, and I know obviously our PE teachers are looking at that, but many of our classroom teachers at the elementary and middle of the high school are saying, hey, you know what? It's only nice in Rochester. Our winter doesn't start until like November 1st. So we have a good 7 weeks that maybe we can get out there and read a novel under a tree, discuss the novel, whatever it's going to be. But I do think we're all going to be looking at the outdoors as an extension of the classroom.
A note from a listener named Sarah says, can't help but feel like by the end of October, everything is going to be closed again here. That's a parent who's concerned that's where we're heading. So in our last 3 minutes or so, Superintendent Gamina, can you give me your view of maybe a best case, worst case in your mind as we get ready to open schools again?
Best case, in my mind, we are hybrid and in for the year until the vaccine is ready and most of us are inoculated, which I do think will, I'm very confident that a year from now, Evan, we're going to be back in school full time. We may still be with masks. We may still be with some other pieces that don't quite look normal, but I'm hoping that we're all back full time. Worst case scenario, I do think that many superintendents won't, we may not be calling snow days this year, but we may be calling COVID days or remote days. And it's because not so much, again, of the infections, but it's because of attendance of staff and teachers and bus drivers. So we may need to call a COVID week, to sort of get everybody better. But hopefully that doesn't have to happen until the holidays.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I remember back when we had landlines. I mean, some listeners will remember landlines. Those were a thing. And you would hear the landline at, my mother was a teacher at 5:30 in the morning. The phone would ring, and my twin brother and I would say, that's going to be a snow day.
Yep.
It's a little different now, but families ought to be ready for some kind of an alert. In what form, Superintendent Gamina, if it's a COVID day or you're kind of calling it on account of lower staff numbers,
right.
what kind of alert are you going to do?
It'll be very similar to a snow day. I would hope, Evan, that we would know 24 to 48 hours ahead of time, so that we're not making that 5:30 a.m. call.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can't rule that out because that's the one thing that I think all of us have learned in the last 6 months is, who would have ever thought that this could happen? So anything is possible. But I would hope to say, hey, parents, listen, next week, Monday through Friday, because of our staff attendance, where our numbers are, we're all going to be remote next week. You're still going to learn, but you're not going to be learning in a classroom. But hopefully people will have about a 24 to 48 hour heads up.
All right, Superintendent Daley, last minute, best case, worst case.
best case is late next spring, our seniors get to come back full time along with everybody else because miraculously this goes away, which would be awesome. You know, I'd love to give these seniors some kind of normalcy in the spring, along with all our other students, obviously. Worst case is similar to Superintendent Camino, is that, you know, at some point, due to absences, we have to start closing for short periods of time to allow people to get healthy again so that we can continue with the hybrid model. That's our big worry.
Well, I think what we're seeing from our kids is they're remarkably resilient. They proved that this spring, and they're going to have this generation pandemic, this COVID generation is going to deal with this school year, and here's hoping it's best cases all around. But both the superintendents today, I know it's a busy time of year for you. Superintendent Daly from Gates-Chiali, thanks for making time, and good luck to you. Let's talk again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
Superintendent Gamina, same. I know there's a lot going on in Webster. Good luck to you, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for all you do.
Great conversation with the superintendents there. Hope it clarifies things. Listeners, sometimes we've been asked, well, you know, why are you having these conversations? You know, there's a lot of different districts. You've had a lot of different conversations. We want clarity for the community, and you can decide what feels comfortable to you, whether you're a parent or a taxpayer, et cetera. But the superintendents are very generous with their time in answering our questions and yours, and we appreciate that. More connections coming up.